Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Will.
I'm Brian.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from bodacious bodices to backwater barracks. Today, we're covering two subclasses of the Bard, the College of Swords and the College of Creation. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
How you doing, man?
I'm making it. I'm getting in there. I'm ready to talk about bards. I'm ready to talk about a reflection of us, like how we are on the show, barding about.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
How are you, man? What's up?
I'm doing good. I'm still getting used to the recording of this remotely, but it's starting to become more of a groove, and I'm ready to get into it.
Definitely. Let's do it.
All right. So in the worlds of Dungeons & Dragons, words and music are not just vibrations of air, but vocalizations with power all their own. The bard is a master of song, speech, and the magic they contain. Bards say that the multiverse was spoken into existence, that the words of the gods gave it shape, and the echoes of these primordial words of creation still resound throughout the cosmos. The music of bards is an attempt to snatch and harness those echoes subtly woven into their spells and powers. The greatest strength of bards is their sheer versatility. Many bards prefer to stick to the sidelines in combat, using their magic to inspire their allies and hinder their foes from a distance. But bards are capable of defending themselves in melee if necessary, using their magic to bolster their swords and armor. Their spells lean towards charms and illusions rather than blatantly destructive spells. They have a wide-ranging knowledge of many subjects and a natural aptitude that lets them do almost anything well. Bards become masters of the talents they set their minds to perfecting, from musical performance to esoteric knowledge. So that's your little re-rundown of the bard, which we've covered the bard many times on this show. Now we're getting into specifics here. So any questions about the bard or any comments about the bard before we tackle our first college, the College of Swords?
You know, when I was building my character, it was the versatility really does scream out in every iteration of the bard that I've ever built. The versatility is definitely there. It's just like inherently built into the class. Like I was almost overwhelmed by options, to so to speak.
Right.
Like, you know, just so much, especially when you start, inserting things like feats that give you even more versatility and options as far as character building. Yeah. I was like, oh, man, like glad that I took some time out of my day. Like you can throw together a fighter pretty quickly if you have an idea of like who you want that fighter to be.
Right.
When you sit down to do a character sheet, when you're sitting down to do a bard character sheet, you're going to need to do like some reading. So definitely prepare for that if you're going to build.
Yeah,
a bard.
There's a lot of thought. Like you said, there's a lot of options, and like versatility is the name of the game. It's even more versatile than the rogue, which is ridiculously versatile.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, you can basically build a rogue, which is kind of what I did, but let's get into it.
Okay.
So first is the College of Swords. Bards of the College of Swords are called blades, and they entertain through daring feats of weapon prowess. Blades perform stunts such as sword swallowing, knife throwing, and juggling in mock combats. Though they use their weapons to entertain, they are also highly trained and skilled warriors in their own right. Their talent with weapons inspires many blades to lead double lives. One blade might use a circus troupe as cover for nefarious deeds such as assassination, robbery, and blackmail. Other blades strike at the wicked, bringing justice to bear against the cruel and powerful. Most troops are happy to accept a blade's talent for the excitement it adds to their performance, but few entertainers fully trust a blade in their ranks. Blades who abandon their lives as entertainers have often run into trouble that makes maintaining their secret activities impossible. A blade caught stealing or engaging in vigilante justice is too great a liability for most troops. With their weapon skills and magic, these blades either take up work as enforcers for thieves' guilds or strike out on their own as adventurers.
So, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I do like the College of Swords. So I remember when the College of Swords came out, I was just like, oh, it's kind of like the College of Valor, but just a little bit more fightery. But reading more into it, the College of Valor Bard, which we're not really talking about today, is kind of like, what if a bard was also a part-time fighter? Well, the College of Swords is more like, what if a bard was a part-time rogue?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of like it says you can go the rogue route, and it also says you can go like the more I mean like knightly, it seems like, or paladin like sort
I
of.
was thinking more along the lines of like the more Robin Hoodie, you know, the more like, you know, fight the
Yeah,
wicked, give back to the poor kind of deal.
I guess that's true.
But yeah, I mean, you could get all zealous about it. I mean, you could slap some zeal onto pretty much any character class and become like a holy zealot. So, but yeah, so first up, the College Sword Bard gets some bonus proficiencies at level 3, which is, of course, the level which you're going to choose the subclass. When you join the College of Swords at third level, you gain proficiency with medium armor and the scimitar. If you're proficient with a simple or martial melee weapon, you can use it as a spellcasting focus for your bard spells, which is really nice. So you're not, you know, having to switch out your melee weapon for a spellcasting focus. It's, you know, quite handy.
Yeah, that is pretty cool just to have it right with you.
Indeed. Also at level 3, you get a fighting style, very much like a fighter would. You adopt a style of fighting as your specialty. Choose one of the following options. You can't take a fighting style option more than once, even if something in the game lets you choose again. So you are very limited. It's not like a fighter, a paladin, or a ranger where you get like 5 or 6 options. You get two. You can either choose dueling or two-weapon fighting. Dueling, when you are wielding a melee weapon in one hand and no other weapons, you get a +2 bonus to damage rolls with that weapon. As we know, that also works if you have a shield in the other hand. So that's a really good one if you want bonus to defense and damage. The next one is the more flashy one, two-weapon fighting. When you engage in two-weapon fighting, you can add your ability modifier to the damage of the second attack, which, of course, is really nice because otherwise dual wielding is not so useful because you don't really get that ability modifier to make the damage worth using your bonus action.
Yeah, I wonder which one of these is more popular. Because I like the idea a lot of having a shield, you know, boost that AC, protect yourself a little more in combat, and then you do get that little extra damage. You know, +2 to damage, that's super meaningful at third level, you know, over the course of a fight.
It really is, and especially like if you're trying to compare it damage-wise to the two-handed, overall the two-handed like probably does like give you a little bit more output, but not enough to like probably counterbalance that +2 to AC. I'm pretty sure all optimization guides I've ever seen really kind of poo-poo on dual wielding, which is a shame because dual wielding is really flashy and fun. But I guess when it comes down to it, that's why we like dual wielding is because it is flashy and fun.
Yeah, exactly. Like if your character has a, if you have a certain fighting style in mind, or if you want the image of someone with two weapons in there in both each hand, you know, like that's, you know, that's up to you. You know, if you want to have that flavor, that image, you know, a lot of people really like that.
Indeed. And I vaguely remember because I did build this character almost a month ago at this point, but I'm pretty sure I built a dual wielder, but we'll get to it. So you get
Okay.
another feature at level 3. This is the big one. It's called Blade Flourish. At third level, you learn to perform impressive displays of martial prowess and speed. Whenever you take the attack action on your turn, your walking speed increases by 10 feet until the end of your turn. And if a weapon attack that you make as part of this action hits a creature, you can use one of the following Blade Flourish options of your choice. You can use only one Blade Flourish option per turn. So immediately, that's awesome. You're getting extra mobility every time you attack, and if you're a College of Sword Bard, you're probably attacking most turns. So like you're especially if you're an elf who already has a higher walking speed. I think Wood Elf is like 35 or something like that. Like an extra 10, like you're moving all over the place. But the
Yeah.
three flourishes you get are thus follows. First is defensive flourish. You can expend one use of your bardic inspiration to cause the weapon to deal extra damage to the target you hit. The damage equals the number you roll on the bardic inspiration die. You also add that number a roll to your AC until the start of your next turn. So a little bit of extra damage, a little bit of extra AC, that's probably going to get used a lot. Next up
Cool.
is slashing. Yeah, next up is slashing flourish. You can expend one use of your bardic inspiration to cause the weapon to deal extra damage to the target you hit and to any other creature of your choice that you can see within 5 feet of you. This damage is equal to the number you roll on your bardic inspiration die. This one isn't going to be used as much as the first, but it is really nice if you're fighting like a bunch of clustered like goblins or something and you just want to do some real good like splash damage, which I just picture like just this crazy flourish of just nicking up everybody and leaving them all bleeding.
Yeah, it's, it looks like a Captain America shield, like if you throw it and you hit like two guys and then the sword comes back to you or something like that.
Right,
that's
yeah.
Pure that's pure flavor because yeah, you're not doing like a range thing, but it's kind of
right,
interesting because
still...
You get, with the Bladesinger, you get the green flame blade cantrip, and that's going to do, mm-hmm. like, a similar thing where it's going to hit splash damage onto somebody within 5 feet of the guy you hit. It's kind of cool. Yeah, definitely for mobs.
Yeah. You know what? Now that I think about it, could this stack with green flame blade? Because you are taking an attack action, but... I'd have to look at the wording for Green Flame Blade because that's like double splash damage. That could be a really good synergy if that works out. Rules as written.
I'll check it out while you're doing stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So the final flourish you get of the three is called Mobile Flourish. You can spend one use of your Bardic Inspiration to cause the weapon to deal extra damage to your target. The damage equals the number you roll on the Bardic Inspiration die. You can also push the target up to 5 feet away from you, plus a number of feet equal to the number that you roll on that die. You can then immediately use your reaction to move up to your walking speed to an unoccupied space within 5 feet of the target. Now, this one I love because it's got a lot of utility. Very much, very, very, very much reminds me of, like, 4th edition powers, where, like, at will, especially if you were, like, a controller or a defender class, you can move your enemy around to a more, you know, advantageous, like, setup, you know, depending on your situation. Plus, you can, you know, throw someone off a cliff or into a hole, too. So that's pretty nice.
Okay. That is fun. I like that one's probably my favorite because you're a bard and you, even though you're this sword fighting bard, you might not want to have people all up in your space like that, especially a bigger monster.
Yeah.
So that can hit harder. So you might want to go into a more like advantageous position on the battlefield, and this will help you do that. I have a couple of weird issues with some of these. Like, you're going to increase your movement by 10 feet, right, when you take the attack action and do one of these. So the mobile mm-hmm. flourish is probably the only one where that's like super duper relevant to move after, because otherwise you're going to be engaged and you might take opportunity attacks, which, I mean, that could be something you're willing to do, but
right.
I think the mobile right. flourish is like the most most useful for that ability for sure.
Yeah, I think you're right there. But let me reread this real quick because let me see. Whenever you take the attack action on your turn, you're walking. Yeah, so you do have to take the attack action before your speed increases. So you're
yeah.
right. Like, yeah, mobile flourish is where that's going to come into play. I just like the idea of, like, I really like the tactical part of the game as much as I like love the role playing part of the game. And, you know, 5th edition is great, and the combat's great, and, like, the tactical stuff's there if you really want to, like, dig into it, but I like it when the game makes it easier for you. Again, one of the strengths of 4E was just how tactical you can get on the battlefield, and I really like the idea of getting into the nitty-gritty of, like, moving people around, you know, getting that advantage, getting the flanking, pushing someone into, you know, like, with mobile flourish, maybe pushing someone into the tankier guys, like, aggro area, and then having your paladin, your fighter, kind of more pull that target towards them to protect your more squishy spellcasters and stuff. I really like getting into that. I like the strategy.
I can see why that is super, like, I love, when I played a fighter and when I'm playing a Bladesinger right now, I love the mobility of being able to move without, like, having to take opportunity attacks, because I multi-class a rogue, so I'm going to use my bonus action a lot to be, like, disengaging yeah. and to, like, get where I need to be, go in for an attack, become defensive afterwards, and, like, get a really good position on the battlefield. It's super meaningful. And one thing you could do is if, let's say you're running up to charge into battle and you're, like, 30 feet away, you have to use your full movement to get to your first enemy. What you could do mm-hmm. is take the defensive flourish, hit the enemy. And then if you don't leave melee range, you can use that extra 10 feet to get onto whatever side of the enemy that you want to be that is most advantageous for you. So that's a cool thing that you
absolutely.
Could do. In terms of Green Flame Blade, we should have kind of known this right up front. You're going to use your action to cast a spell and not take the attack action. So there's no stacking
okay.
that.
Yeah.
Okay. I pulled it up. I'm like, this is a spell.
I know the wording with the cantrip, with the attack cantrips is a little funny. So
it doesn't stack, you use your action to use a spell, and the spell says make a melee attack. So you use your action
so
to do a spell.
You're not taking the attack action.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's all about like the order in which you select, you know, in this case.
It very much is. So, because you talked briefly about multi-classing. If I was to, like, build a College of Swords bard for the long term, I would definitely dip a couple levels into Rogue for that sneak attack and a couple other things. It's just the synergy is just too good to not.
It really is. And you're going to get, like, a lot of magic bonuses just because you're a bard. You get that full caster feel.
Yeah, I would definitely like choose a College of Sword bard multi-classed into rogue over an arcane trickster rogue. You know what I mean? That would extra magic.
Rogue, paladin, warlock, those are all like excellent multi-classes. And I could pretty much see any of those being stacked with this.
Very much so. But let's move on. So at level 6, you get the extra attack feature, which is you get to attack twice instead of once when you make your attack action. And finally, at level 14, you get the final big feature. It's called Master's Flourish. Whenever you use a Blade Flourish option, which you're probably going to use a lot, you can roll a d6 and use it instead of expending a Bardic Inspiration die. So now you can do it ad infinitum for free. You don't have to use that Inspiration die, which is nice because you really want to use that Inspiration die for the more healy stuff that you do, if you can. So obviously, you got to wait till level 14, which is a long time to wait, but... that would be a very refreshing option to get once you get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Should we go over Bardic Inspiration die, since it might have been a while for, like, maybe there's
it
a newer player out there.
It has been a while. Do you have it pulled up already?
I'm in the process of pulling it up. I thought maybe you would have already had it.
No.
But I'm very close.
I think it's a good idea, and, like, I wish I had, like, already set that up beforehand. It's something I should have thought of. But yeah,
no, you're good.
Let's go over Bardic
yeah.
Inspiration die. Cool.
I'll read it.
Give
so,
it to us.
At first level, you're going to get the Bardic Inspiration. It's like a big mainstay of the Bard. It's the huge, like, you know, a Bard is really more of like a buff class or like a role-playing class to me, personally. I mean, these subclasses really give you, like, the utility to move forward with your own actions in combat and stuff and, like, maybe magic. But this is what every bard gets. You can inspire others through stirring words or music. To do so, use a bonus action on your turn to choose one creature that you other than yourself within 60 feet of you who can hear you. That creature gains one bardic inspiration die, a d6. Once within the next 10 minutes, the creature can roll the die and add the number rolled to one ability check, attack roll, or saving throw it makes. That's super duper powerful. The player gets the choice. That receives the inspiration die. The creature can wait until after it rolls the d20 before deciding to use the bardic inspiration die, but must decide before the DM says whether the roll succeeds or fails. Once the bardic inspiration die is rolled, it is lost. A creature can only can have only one bardic inspiration die at a time, so no stacking them. You can use this feature a number of times equal to your charisma modifier with a minimum of once. You regain any expended uses when you finish a long rest. Your bardic inspiration die changes when you reach certain levels in this class. The die becomes a D8 at 5th level, a D10 at 10th level, and a D12 at 15th level. That really kind of scales, like, when you're doing casting, especially with cantrips, you know, those cantrip buffs kind of scale with your character level. This is going to do the same thing with your bard level.
Absolutely.
Really, really, really cool. And I think the... later on, you can... Is that every bard where you get bardic inspiration die recharges at short rests?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, I think that's every bard. I read it in here.
I'm pretty
earlier,
sure it's every bard. Yeah, we'll talking about it. This reminds me how freaking nice it is to have a bard in your party.
I know, and they're really good at everything. Like, when we say that they're versatile, this jack-of-all-trades feature, which you get at second level... you take half your proficiency bonus, you round it down on any ability check that you make that doesn't already include your proficiency bonus. So any check that you're going to do is going to be buffed. Any ability check.
Yeah, you're good.
It's
you
just
really
so
are
good
at everything.
Yeah. You can do
right.
some
so
heals.
Any other comments?
A little bit of everything. Yeah, you're good.
Any other comments on the sword bard before we move on to my character?
I would like to know who your roguish archetype bard is.
Okay, so I did do what I said I was going to do last time we did a character episode, and I actually wrote a little thing so that I wasn't trying to pull all the information from my head.
Okay.
So this character is very obviously based off of a fictional character, which I can't wait for people to guess in the comments. I'm pretty sure certain readers of certain books will figure it out very quickly, but I'm not going to say who. So my character's name is Kalain. Kalain is a stern and intense individual with a powerful and commanding presence, though he hides this most of the time behind friendly smiles and a silver tongue. Kalain uses his charisma to get what he wants, and more often that is with honey over vinegar. He's also a rebel against the established aristocracy engaging in criminal activity aimed at hurting the rich and the powerful, and of course lining his own pockets and the pockets of his men. Though likable and friendly to those who are acquainted with him, a fiery passionate anger burns in this man that those close to him see. He's dangerous and at times reckless, and he's not to be trusted. Kalain was born to a servant woman in the employ of a nobleman whose identity is unknown. Whoever this aristocrat was, though, he wanted no bastards. His mother was killed, and Kalain was to be taken care of by abandonment at an orphanage in a city far from his birth. His childhood was a life of meagerness and misery. Not enough food and no money led to thieving and begging, which in turn led to running with young gangs and low-level thug work. Kel was a natural grifter and sneak thief and had a disposition for taking charge. Here he learned how to give orders and coerce coarse and angry people to do what he desired. He learned well, and his gang prospered, eventually enough to garner the attention of a local prominent thieves' guild, led by a cutthroat savant, a half-elf named Kalain Trace. Kalain was a true savant, a master thief, a magician, a minstrel, and a spy. He operated heists that were legendary and had never been caught, and he was always recruiting new talent. The word of a young man, barely 8 years old, causing ruckus in the slums with well-coordinated gang activity, had reached him, and he was intrigued. He offered Kalain a job, one that involved a break-in, one where Kel had to make a choice between himself and his men, and he chose himself. And he left his men caught by the authorities and himself with the prize to present to his new master. And Kel passed the test. Over the years, Kalain learned everything he could from Valen. Subterfuge, disguises, music, and swordplay. How to hide his intentions with a smile. And in Kalain, Valen forged a prodigy in the making. Another version of himself. But Kalain wanted more than riches. He wanted revenge and justice. Master and student have parted ways, and Kalain has found his way back to the city of his birth. He's assembled a team, and now it's time to plan the heist of his life. So that is my character, his backstory, based off a fictional character. I think it's pretty obvious, but it's good stuff. So let's look at his character stat block. I only built him up to level 6. He's all charisma and dexterity. He dual wields a couple scimitars. I got him trained in athletics, performance. I guess I didn't choose a lot of other stuff, but let's go with stealth and sleight of hand. I'm really leaning into the roguish stuff. Only 33 hit points. Go ahead.
What I was going to say with the, I had a similar problem with the skill proficiencies. There's actually not very many that you get to choose for Bard, which is a little interesting why, you know, you get all these powerful features later on, like expertise. So I was thinking, like, I was going to get to, with this jack of all trades thing, I was like, okay, well, I'll be good at a lot of skills. But the jack of all trades thing, I think, is there to cover this. You get a lot more tool proficiencies with bards. Like, it made me pick 3 instruments and 3 skills. And then I didn't pick any more skills after that. So I was like, oh, so in expertise later, like, I didn't have an extra. I ran out of skills to choose.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely the jack of all trades thing that's supposed to cover it. So I think for the background, I chose Urchin because he lived on the streets. I grabbed a couple feats for him. So the first was dual wielder, which gives him plus AC while he's wielding separate melee weapons. And I was going to try and use it so that he could dual wield like long swords, and I was going to lean into his strength, but it just didn't feel right. So I went back to the scimitar. He still gets that +1 AC, which is nice. And then I also gave him the medium armor master feat. So wearing medium armor doesn't impose disadvantage on his stealth checks. And when he wears medium armor, he can add 3 rather than 2 to his AC with his dex mod. So that's not going to come into play at his level right now, but theoretically later on it would.
Totally. Okay.
I went with human. I don't think I said that before. So that's how we got the extra feat there, because I still bump my ability scores up. Let me see here. Is there anything else of particular? Oh, yes, spells. So I tried to choose ones that really fit into his background. So his cantrips are Friends, Light, and Prestidigitation. He knows Command, Featherfall, Calm Emotions, Detect Thoughts, Invisibility, Silence, Suggestion, Enemies Abound, and Slow. So all stuff really geared towards controlling other people around him, or at least influencing them, and or just subterfuge and stealth and stuff like that, and gotcha. Escaping a tight situation. So he definitely puts Sounds himself awesome. First. Yeah, he's a very chaotic neutral character, which is really not my speed. As a matter of fact, this guy's based off a character that I actually hate, even though he's a great character, like like narratively speaking, it's a character that frustrates me and I do not like.
Yeah, but that can be a good thing in a story, right? To have that like antagonistic feel for right. some dichotomy. Yeah,
indeed. I do think that if I were to like include this person in a campaign I was playing, it would be one of those characters that could lean towards being a villain, but also could be an ally, and is definitely one of those not to be trusted, more neutral sources of information and or interaction for the party. If coming from a DM,
yeah. Perspective. So you picked a human.
Human, yes.
And you went with like it's more of like a Robin Hood type character, if I'm getting that correctly, right? Like in
kinda,
that sort of feel.
Kalane would definitely want you to think that about himself, but Kalane serves right. Kalane's purposes, and he's kind of a sociopath. Like, he doesn't really care about his men, even though he makes his men definitely feel like he does, and he might even believe he does until the moment comes where he has to cut them loose, in which he'll do it in a heartbeat.
Okay, for sure.
Yeah, he's kind of a bastard.
Yeah, I can see that. So that's actually really cool. I like that. And how much is the guild going to play into, like, this character? Like, if you were to sit this character down in the campaign, were you kind of imagining a guild-type setting where you have to, like, report back to them a lot and things like that?
So I kind of, the way I wrote it was, like, he's walked away from his old master and he's in a different city now. But, like, obviously, the DM would be able to come in and be like, yeah, your dude, Valen, you know, he says he's in trouble and he needs you. What are you going to do? You know what I mean? Like, you could use right. that as different hooks, you know, when, oh, your old thieves guild has been infiltrated by an old enemy. Are you going to go back? Kind of deal. So, you know, it's definitely open for that. But like, basically, this guy wants revenge on his father who killed his mother and banished him. And he's come back to the city of his birth to kind of, like, raise hell upon the aristocracy.
I see. Cool. Right on.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast. Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
So next up, we're talking about the College of Creation. Now, this is a newer one. This one is available in Tasha's Guide.
It's Tasha's
Cauldron of Everything. That's it.
Cauldron of all the things.
What was that?
I did my funny name for it.
Oh.
The Cauldron of all the things.
Yes, it is the Cauldron of all the things. And this is an interesting one. It really leans into what we talked about at the beginning of the episode, where like the bards kind of tap into this echoes of like the music of creation and stuff like that. And
yes.
Yeah, let's get into it. So bards believe the cosmos is a work of art, the creation of the first thoughts of dragons and gods. The creative work included harmonies that continue to resound through existence today, a power known as the Song of Creation. The bards of the College of Creation draw on that primeval song through dance, music, and poetry, and their teachers share this lesson. Before the sun and the moon, there was the song, and its music awoke the first dawn. Its melodies so delighted the stones and trees that some of them gained a voice of their own, and now they sing too. Learn the song, students, and you too can teach the mountains to sing and dance. Dwarves and gnomes often encourage their bards to become students of the Song of Creation, and among Dragonborn, the Song of Creation is revered, for legends portray Bahamut and Tiamat, the greatest of dragons, as two of the song's first singers.
Yeah, I love this lore so much. Like, it's one of my favorite things about the bard in general, because what I see in fantasy writing more often in recent times is they use like the song, you know, as a something that purveys everything, all of, you know, the entire cosmos, just like this is saying. And it's kind of fun because you can kind of draw a parallel between, like, if everything is just these vibrations, you know, and we're seeing like the production of like everything, all these molecules just vibrating together, all this like random material that's coalesced.
Right.
So the song really does purvey through everything, like how, you know, every language is just another way of expression, but they're all essentially the same thing.
Right, exactly. That's really, really good.
It's really cool.
I like
it a lot.
Indeed. So the first feature you get at level 3 is called Moat of Potential. So whenever you give a creature a bardic inspiration die, you can utter a note from the Song of Creation to create a tiny moat of potential, which orbits within 5 feet of that creature. The moat is intangible and invulnerable, and it lasts until the bardic inspiration die is lost. The moat looks like a musical note, a star, a flower, or another symbol of art or life that you choose. When the creature uses the bardic inspiration die, the moat provides an additional effect based on whether the die benefits an ability check, an attack roll, or a saving throw, as detailed below. So, you know, like with a lot of the newer subclasses, these subclasses get really wordy and complicated, so we're going to go over each of these different effects that your mode of potential can cover. So first is ability check. When the creature rolls the bardic inspiration die to add it to an ability check, the creature can roll the bardic inspiration die again and choose which roll to use, as the moat pops and emits colorful, harmless sparks for a moment. So it's like you have advantage on it, which is kind of cool. If you use it for an attack roll, immediately after the creature rolls the bardic inspiration die to add it to an attack roll against a target, the moat thunderously shatters. The target and each creature of your choice that you can see within 5 feet of it must succeed on a constitution saving throw against their spell save DC or take thunder damage equal to the number rolled on the bardic inspiration die. That's fun. That's pretty cool. And then finally, saving throw. Immediately after the creature rolls the bardic inspiration die and adds it to a saving throw, the moat vanishes with the sound of soft music, causing the creature to gain temporary hit points equal to the number rolled on the bardic inspiration die plus your charisma modifier. So, very supportery, and I love it. I kind of love every bit of it.
Yeah, it's just a bonus off of your bardic inspiration die. Like, do the bardic inspiration die stuff even more. Like, here's a bonus for that.
There was, long time ago, back in my fourth edition days, there was a player I played with who world of Bard, and they reflavored everything. And they call themselves an ink mage. And basically, all of their spells, they were like paintings that they would do with like a magic paintbrush and bring to life. And I could see that very much fitting with this Bard of Creation.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. Like when we talk about, like, you know, a lot of the Bard stuff is geared more towards music when mm-hmm. we talk about Bard, but there's a lot of Bard stuff that's like, these Bards are not just musicians, they're historians, they're storytellers within right. your world. And yeah, you can do, but that could translate to any kind of performance or like, you know, poetry or art or, you know, anything creative, really. You can kind of put a layer over your Bard and use that as flavor. It's like all these tool proficiencies that you get to select in D&D Beyond, just like change them to whatever it is that you want your Bard to be doing.
Yep, absolutely. Reflavor it all. So you get another feature at level 3. It's called Performance of Creation. As an action, you can channel the magic of the Song of Creation to create one non-magical item of your choice in an unoccupied space within 10 feet of you. The item must appear on a surface or in a liquid that can support it. The gold value of the item can't be more than 20 times your Bard level, and the item must be medium or smaller. The item glimmers softly, and a creature can faintly hear music when touching it. The created item disappears after a number of hours equal to your proficiency bonus. For example, of items that you can create, see the equipment chapter of the Player's Handbook. Once you create an item with this feature, you can't do so again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a spell slot of second level or higher to use this feature again. You can have only one item created by this feature at a time. If you use this action and already have an item from this feature, the first one immediately vanishes. The size of the item you can create with this feature increases by one size category when you reach 6th level, which it can then be large, and then 14th level, which it can then be huge. And I went ahead and we got the stat block for your item here. And it's called a dance. Go ahead.
Did you want me to read it since it's a stat block?
Yeah, you know, you go right ahead.
So the dancing item is a large or smaller construct with an armor class of 16, hit points of 10, plus 5 times your bard level. So for me, I'm creating a level 10 bard. I usually just go with level 10 because it gets a nice scope of features for the class. But it's going to be 5
you know,
5 times
up.
10
hold
plus
up before
10.
Hold up before we cover this, because you know what? There's kind of more to talk about, and then we'll come back to this, because I'm realizing this block really is attached more to the next feature, which is also part of this performance of creation feature. It's all tied together. So let me explain the dancing item before we go over the stat block. Sorry about that, man. That's my bad.
Sure.
Yeah. So at level 6, you get animating performance. So as an action, you can target a large or small non-magical item that you can see within 30 feet of you and animate it. The animate item uses the dancing item stat block, which uses your proficiency bonus. The item is friendly to you and your companions and obeys your commands. It lives for 1 hour until it is reduced to 0 hit points or until you die. In combat, the item shares your initiative count, but it takes its turn immediately after yours. It can move and use its reaction on its own, but the only action it takes on its turn is the dodge action. Unless you take a bonus action on your turn to command it to take another action. That action can be one of its stat block or some other action. If you are incapacitated, the item can take any action of its choice, not just dodge. When you use your Bardic Inspiration feature, you can command the item as part of the same bonus action you use your Bardic Inspiration. Once you animate an item with this feature, you can't do so again until you finish a long rest, unless you expend a spell slot of 3rd level or higher to use this feature again. You can have only one item animated by this feature at a time. If you use this action and already have a dancing item from this feature, the first one immediately becomes inanimate. And now, Brian, tell us all about this dancing item stat block.
Right, so larger, smaller construct with an armor class of 16 natural armor with HP of 10 plus 5 times your bard level. It's got a speed of 30 feet and a flying speed or hover of 30 feet. So it's going to have a strength of 18, a dex of 14, constitution of 16, intelligence of 4, a wisdom of 10, and charisma of 6. It's going to be immune to poison and psychic, and if you're immune to poison, it means you're strong. Conditional immunities are charmed, exhaustion, poisoned, frightened. It's going to get dark vision of 60 feet, passive perception of 10. Its languages are going to be understand the languages you speak. So it's just going to mirror that. It's not listing a challenge rating. Its proficiency bonus equals your bonus. The first feature is the immutable form. The item is immune to any spell or effects that would alter its form. An irrepressible dance. When any creature starts its turn within 10 feet of the item can increase or decrease, and it's up to you, the walking speed of that creature by 10 feet until the end of the turn, provided the item isn't incapacitated. And for the actions, so, it's got force... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, so I take it, it starts dancing around whatever creature starts moving and impeding it.
Yes.
Okay, nice. Go ahead, sorry.
I don't know how you would flip that to make it somebody go faster, but you could do that too.
Maybe it like gets behind them and starts like pushing them.
The power, if it's an instrument, which like I was thinking mine might be, it would the power of music would make you go fast. I don't know.
There you go.
We'll get there. So the actions are a force empowered slam. So force is like magical, like Eldritch Blast does force damage, right? So force empowered slam. Melee weapon attack, your spell attack modifier to hit is what you use. It's got a reach of 5 feet and one target. It's got to hit one target you can see. Let's see. It's going to do 1d10 plus PB force damage. What? PB force damage? What is that?
Proficiency bonus force damage.
Oh, yeah, I see.
So
proficiency
the reason
bonus.
This thing doesn't have a challenge rating is because it's tied into your growth as a character. So its challenge rating just fluctuates.
Yeah, I wonder how similar this is to the Artificer's, like Gollum.
Defender.
Yeah, it's really reminding me a lot of that.
Yeah, it is similar in some ways. So this feature seems to be basically kind of three things. It's a little bit of extra damage. It is kind of a tactical controller, which you know I like. It's slowing down your enemies. It's speeding up your allies, you know. So it's helping control the battlefield. And then it's also a distraction because if, you know, you're fighting, I don't know, a dumb ogre, this thing's going to be really annoying to it and probably distract it off your guys, which is nice.
Yeah, especially if it's noisy, which I'm thinking it might be.
Definitely.
And an extra body on the field is always super beneficial. Eating turns in Dungeons & Dragons is really mechanically embedded into the game. So this might eat up somebody's turn just as a distraction.
Yeah, absolutely. And its defenses are nothing to sneeze at. You got a natural 16 armor class, and its physical stats, strength, dex, and con are very impressive. Like, if that was a fighter, that would be a buff-ass fighter.
Yeah, its AC might be higher than yours.
Yeah, exactly. Its AC might be higher than yours. So that's fantastic. And its HP is, like, it's okay. It depends on your bard level, I suppose. Like, let's see, a level 5 bard, so 35 HP, it's about the same as whatever your bard's HP is going to be. But, yeah,
right.
So nothing to
and depending
at.
On how you use it, it could be on the field for, like, 3 to 5 turns, you know, if it's getting attacked.
It's definitely a fun and unique feature. I love it. I love it.
So I like how you can use your proficiency or your spell slots to do it again.
Yes, that is nice, where it's like... It's kind of a cap on how many times you can do it, but if you really want to do it, you can kind of push through. I like that soft cap.
Yes.
So the final feature you get as a College of Creation Bard is called Creative Crescendo, and you get this at level 14. When you use your Performance of Creation feature, you can create more than one item at once. The number of items equals your Charisma modifier with a minimum of 2. If you create an item that would exceed that number, you choose which of the previously created item disappears. Only one of these items can be of the maximum size you can create. The rest must be small or tiny. You are no longer limited by gold value when creating items with the Performance of Creation. And very much very much as the name of this subclass is and of all these subclass features are, like, this really is a creative feature. And, like, nothing immediately pops out to me as, like, what I would use this for. If I were playing this, but, like, I'm sure if you were to sit down and really pore over all the items you can make, you know, all the different situations you could use those items, I'm sure some crazy creative stuff can come out of this.
Yeah, I mean, like, the options are almost unlimited when it comes to
exactly.
This item.
So it's one of those
like
things
the,
where
the
it's
gold
like,
count was what was the big limiter.
It was. And it's one of those things where it's like, oh, yeah, that seems really awesome until someone comes up with something so genius it breaks the game. The DM's like, God damn it.
So. Yeah, I mean, well, you cross that bridge when you get to it, you know?
Exactly. As a Dungeon Master, you got to be ready for that. Your players are always going to do that, and that's okay. You know, it's fun stuff. So anything you want to add before we get into your character?
No, I'm ready.
All right, tell me all I'm about your character, Brian. I'm very curious.
Okay, well, I was very conflicted at what direction I wanted to go in when I was reading the stats, because at first I was like, okay, I have a clear like picture of a dynamic character I want to create. And then halfway through, when you start like getting into these like animating objects, like kind of thing, like, cause you could take spells as your bard to do that sort of thing too. Like the bard spell list is really nice. Yeah. But you know, I really got into some Yen Sid sort of feels, like Sorcerer's Apprentice stuff. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. that would be fun to do. But I really like the first thing I came up with. So I ripped a name out of a game that I used to play this wizard in your special guest Jake's game that he played for a little while. I played with him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's nothing like that character. I just like the name so much. And I think it fits a lot better on this character than that one. But my character's name is Conjoner. inspired by John Connor from Terminator, series. Yeah. And then, so I was thinking I would just lift, John Connor, turn him into Conjoner, but, I took a Protector ASMR is going to be the class I went with.
Okay.
It's going to give you that nice +2 boost to charisma. So that was, I thought that would be cool to like buff the bard. And I wanted to give him the soldier background and make him a military leader of high rank, fighting in the post-apocalypse where the Warforged have taken over.
Nice. Hell yeah.
Yeah. I'll call it WeaveNet instead of Skynet, like the magical weave.
Absolutely. Yes. And,
yeah. So we're, Conjoner is one of the leaders of the resistance fighting against the Warforged controlled by the WeaveNet. They want to eradicate mankind and I guess humanoid kind and all of their fleshy stupidity, I guess. So with Conjoner, I want to go with the I really like the idea of a military using the features of bards to like provide support to troops in combat.
So oh, like kind of like just a warlord, like a combat, like inspirational leader.
Yeah, like I really love the idea of an army like charging forward, you know, clerics in the back sort of thing to like run up and do heals on people, and then like a big horse drawing a wagon with a bard in the back of the wagon just like fucking jamming, right? Like yeah, playing music absolutely. And like helping everybody kick ass, you know, absolutely. Giving out bardic inspiration, all that stuff. This will be kind of like that, like that's more of a fantasy setting. This is like we're a tactical guerrilla regime, you know, we hide in the sewers of the old societies and make bunkers and all this stuff. But yeah, the Protector ASMR is going to like fight for justice and do all this stuff a lot like I picture John Connor doing. For my proficiencies, I took the drum, the flute, and the lute, and mostly because that sounded nice when I was going absolutely. Through the list. And then I took Arcana, History, and Persuasion. So the Arcana is big for the creation bard to like understand what they're doing and how it all works. History, and not just the this is going to be weird because I'm going to tie my character into like time, like
of course you are.
like the flavor is going to be time travel a little bit. So not just proficient in history, but in future history, I guess.
Uh-huh. Oh, boy.
And then persuasion as a way to like help people, like convince people to do what he knows is going to happen, like to fight right. the future pretty much, or like trust me, I know what's going to happen, like we need to do this.
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
That I thought that would be really helpful. So then we move down to the expertise. I'm going to take expertise in history and persuasion. Expertise in history, not just past history. My mo of potential, I was kind of thinking what the flavor of that should be. What do you think, Will? Because it says here the moat looks like a musical note, star, or flower, or another symbol. Maybe mine should look like a little clock, like a digital counter.
If you're really going with the time thing, then yeah, I think that's very fitting.
Yeah, I think this will be post Judgment Day, John Connor or Con uh-huh. Johnner. So it'll be maybe it'll be like time since Judgment Day.
Oh, like so on it's the counter, actually, like but, it's a clock that's been counting. Down since.
Up.
Or up.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, up since.
Counting up since. I don't know.
Now, I know you chose ASMR for, like, a mechanical reasons. Was there any, like, lore reasons that you went with that?
Not really. I mean, like John Connor is supposed to be the savior of mankind, and this protection
so like a
messianic ASMR kind of, like...
style thing.
Yes, it's more like that than like,
that's cool.
Oh,
I'm into that.
You're chosen by God. Like, God doesn't exist. It wouldn't have let the robots happen.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I don't know.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
Do they believe in God in Terminator? I haven't seen a Terminator movie where somebody's, like, praying yet.
Me neither.
But I haven't been watching any of the recent ones.
That's also true.
Because they're so bad. For ability score increases, I took a feat instead of that. And I went with Great Weapon Master. I was looking at this like, okay, well, like, I like the bard thing, but also this is a soldier fighting in the trenches, and mm-hmm. so I kind of want I wanted to hit, like, how much military experience can I give to a full caster, and like, how much versatility can I add to this? I took Great Weapon Master. So on my turn, when I score a critical hit with a melee weapon or reduce a creature to 0 hit points with one, I can make one melee weapon attack as a bonus action. And then before you make a melee weapon attack with a heavy weapon that you are proficient with, you can choose to take a -5 penalty to the attack roll. If the attack hits, you add +10 to the attack's damage. So kind of like an all or nothing. I can see, you know, grabbing like a big heavy weapon in a moment of need. And
right.
I'm just kind of swinging it down overhead.
Okay, for sure.
So, here it is. The font of inspiration at fifth level is when you get to expend your bardic inspiration in short rests. Which is going to be critical for this character running away from Warforged. Counter charm, that's like a normal bard thing. Animating performance is the College of Creation thing, like using the dancing item. I was thinking like it could be a big bass guitar. I thought that would be really cool. And
yeah,
it's
not?
This that made me want to do the Yen Sid, like, Sorcerer's Apprentice thing. Like maybe I could just animate brooms and stuff, or, like, throw a broom down and animate objects to help have, like, a bunch of shit running around. I don't know.
Yeah.
I kind of started getting lost in the weeds.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit, but it's cool. I mean, it's a crazy character, but I like it. I mean, if he's out there in the trenches, like, maybe... maybe he's animating, like, the upper torso of an already dead Warforged that's, like, singing or something.
Yeah,
or,
see,
or
that,
like,
that's
yeah,
what I was
or,
thinking.
Singing,
like
a military tune.
Yeah, or, like, the T-800. Like, let's boot up the T-800 and, like, have Arnold. Like, I would make an Arnold Schwarzenegger with my anime, with my dancing item.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, like, if I wanted to... I think the cool. So I think I am gonna go with the Arnold thing for the animated. Because I thought the big bass guitar would be cool, but I think Arnold would be better.
So now I
would create him. He would be like.
Hold on, now I gotta see. There's a size limit on this thing, right? Oh no, it could be large. It could be large or smaller.
Yeah.
So yeah, you make that Arnold. You do your thing, man.
Yeah, and I was wondering, like, if there are all these scraps of robots around all the time of, like, Warforged, like,
uh-huh.
I could probably, like, mitigate some of the gold use. Like, how much would it cost to make it in the setting I'm like, planning on running this guy in? Because I'm not going to get to that level 14 today.
I mean, I would allow it. It's not going to be able to do anything functional beyond what the stat block says anyway. So, like, who cares? Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, I thought, like, spare parts could mitigate the money thing. Like, what spare parts are around? And, like, maybe he'd have to carry some with him, like, some kind of,
right.
like, military contraband, like, transport would hold that for him so he could use the materials to do that, or just like maybe he could just make it out of spare parts around. Like there's enough wreckage to like construct it. And I always imagine
I would definitely work with you on that as a dungeon master. I would allow it. We'd figure something out together for sure.
Yeah, I think for the force empowered slam, that's pretty straightforward. This this irrepressible dance. That's so funny to think of him doing, to think of Arnold Schwarzenegger doing this type of stuff. But so within 10 feet of the, I would he'd be like, go over there if you want to live.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And you get that extra 10 feet, or like, yeah, he would get in the way of somebody else. With like big robot arms or whatever.
and it's difficult to move Arnold. He's such a big guy.
He's so huge. Look at those shoulders. The wingspan on this dude. I'm saying Arnold, but I just mean the T-800.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. let's see. Yeah, it's going to understand languages. Immune to poison. I think it's all tracks here so far. For my second ability score improvement, I went with the skilled feat. So I could pick extra skills here. So my military background gave me like a bunch of stuff too. It gave me like two extra skills. But for the expertise I get at 10th level, before I took this feat, I was like out of skills to pick that I wanted to use for expertise, which like I found kind of jarring for the bard, like that was possible. Like you could just like lose out on like not having a skill. So I took athletics, acrobatics, and survival because I thought that was all really like important for this character to have, and I didn't pick it up front. So that kind of saved me there, and so I took the expertise on Arcana and athletics when I got it. And then you get this cool thing at level 10 for bards called Magical Secrets. By 10th level, you have plundered magical knowledge from a wide spectrum of disciplines. Choose two spells from any class, including this one. A spell you choose must be of a level you can cast, as shown as the bard table cantrip, blah, blah, blah. So it let me pick two additional spells from any classes at 14th level and again at 18th level. But I took Summon Construct to do like more construct summoning, I guess. Yes. And I also took Banishment to like kind of play with that time distortion.
Yeah,
stuff.
Banish you into the time, into the past, into the future, whatever.
Yeah, like maybe my dancing item is like I time travel a T-800 like into being right there. Like with some, like I was thinking I could have like an item that's some like magical device that could dilate time like that to add flavor, you know, just for this feature.
Yeah, absolutely.
And kind of take some of the magical element away and replace it with the machines for this like sort of like setting I have in mind to play in. Which is, you know, post-apocalyptic in a lot of ways.
Very much.
And, but yeah, that's pretty much inherently what the character is and what it's about. I think for the ability scores, I took like, let me look at that really quick because I know I tried to do like as much interesting stuff as I could.
I mean, you did some wild stuff. I'm looking at it right now, and the dexterity is just a tragedy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I picture him, like, you know, sitting in the back and, like, doing bard shit and, like, making things appear and so he doesn't have to go fight. Yeah. And his soldiers probably wouldn't want him to die anyway. So he's going to sit in the back and
This class doesn't have any synergy with the Artificer, but I would love to see the multi-class here. It just feels like that's what this character should do.
So I almost took the Artificer Initiate feat, but it was a little too complicated for the episode, I think. I think maybe if I played the character, I would do that. But I definitely got that too when I was building it. I was like, oh, that would be cool to like make even more stuff. And make guns.
Absolutely. Yeah, it just feels right for the character for sure.
It does. That might be a magical multi-class that I could look into one day if I ever decide to play this character, if I happen upon a game in this sort of setting. But yeah, I took 15th strength. I took 8 dex, 10 con, 12 intelligence, wisdom 13, which is getting boosted, and charisma 14, which is getting boosted. So yeah, wisdom ends up being 14, charisma ends up being a 16. But yeah, that's pretty much the character in a nutshell right there of, the mobility. Yeah, it's sad. The AC is probably going to be really low. Like, I didn't really put a bunch of items or anything on this guy yet. I'm sure he's going to have some military grade, you know, Rebel Alliance grade stuff. So maybe not the best available, but they're making do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really like you. You definitely took the creation bard in like a wild direction I never see. I would never think of, but I think it's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I was like, I had classic fantasy in mind when I opened the sheet up, and then I immediately went away from that, and then I almost went back to it like halfway through. But yeah, that was pretty much it, man. Like that's the creation bard I made.
Great job, man, Con Johnner. Well, I think with that being said, I think we can get ready for a long rest.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the long rest, where we get ready for bed. And in our nighttime, you know, laying up at the ceiling, going to count sheep. Instead, we're going to count beams.
Indeed, beholder we are. Beams.
we're gonna build our beholder. Let's do a quick recap. Let's see.
Oh, nice.
I think
yes.
We started with the Ettercaps episode. We have a web beam and spider tentacles instead. So spider legs instead of tentacles with little eyes on the end. Then we have the monks episode where we did the Donzo hand. So is what I wrote. But it's a hand at the end of that tentacle with an eye in it. And then the beam of ultimate mercy, which could heal somebody super good. then we had the Goths episode where we skipped and we did the three hearts factoid. Next we had the Satyrs episode. That was the beam of revelry. Horns? No, we gave it the useless the goat legs.
Oh, okay, that was goat legs and revelry beam. Oh my gosh, this thing's horrendous.
Yeah. People were really taken aback by the legs.
indeed.
Which is good. And then the Remoraz episode, which had the bite and swallow beam, which that thing, it's, I don't think it was a beam, was it? It was just like if you're too close.
Yeah, it'll bite and swallow you into its spider tentacle, which is horrifying. Jesus.
Yeah, and then it had those finned wings that the Remoraz has on its sides. And that's where we left off.
That is where we left off. So, okay, my idea for a
horrible
beam
thing
is a creation beam. And I'm not sure how. I kind of have two ideas here. But the main one is it can create basically a drone of itself. Like a mini annoying, like its own little personal, what are those things called? Gazer. Like it can create a gazer with a beam, like a little dancing gazer item that can like distract and move along and do force slams on. So, and I don't think it needs the limit. So like, you know, these beams are random. So like there's a random chance that this thing is going to create a little gazer minion like three or four times in the fight. So you might end up fighting like a whole army of these things.
So let me, can I add on to that a little bit?
Absolutely. What do you got?
I like the gazer thing, but can we give it like the T-800's body?
Yeah, sure. So absolutely. So it's little T-800's?
Yeah, it's, well, it's not even little. It could be large, just like the stat, you know?
Oh, okay, so it's just going to make T-800's. That's horrifying. Holy shit.
But instead of the face of Arnold, it'll be the face of a gazer. So it'll have those little eyes and tentacles on top still.
Yeah.
And the center eye should be the red like tracking eye from the movies.
Absolutely. 100%.
You guys remember Terminator 2, the movie from the 1990s?
actually, I think the movie was made in the late 80s. Was it early 90s?
The first one was made in the late 80s, and the second one was made in 91. And I checked that earlier.
1990s. Nice.
Well, Terminator 2 is, yeah.
Which is the better of the two, but Terminator 1's good.
You're right.
So what do we call the beam then? Because I feel like calling it a beam of creation or a creation beam doesn't really capture it. I mean, we could just call it the T-800 beam.
Yeah.
I think that's fitting.
Yeah. All right. Let's call it the T-800 beam.
Beam settled. I got no idea what to do with the feature on this one, man. College of Swords. I just picture more blades. Okay, what do you got?
Yeah, knives instead of teeth.
Okay, it's got blades for teeth. That's horrifying.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay, so it's got steel blade teeth.
Cruella, so the teeth would normally be
Cruella,
these like...
Go ahead.
So the blade, the beholder teeth are usually like these spires, right? Or like these fangs, really.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, they're little sharp cones, but instead they'll be like, you know, little, like sword columns with the point at the end instead. So yeah, the mouth is going to look horrifying. Even
so,
more horrifying.
Like, Cruelize DeVille was horrifying, but there was also like a grace and elegance to Cruelize. Like this thing that we're making now, which does not have a name yet, is a whole order of magnitude more horrifying than Cruelize ever was.
We're definitely stepping it up. We're upping the ante. Yeah, we're upping the ante on this for sure.
Okay. All right.
We're giving the Hobbleman, we're cutting his work out for him on this, indeed, like 100%. I do have a pitch for the name, since we struggled with it a lot.
Yes, what do you got?
I think it should be Rays, like, you know, Rays from the Sun with an S at the end. Rays Romano. Yeah, Rays Romano.
I mean, we already got like a couple of things on here that aren't Rays, though, so we might want to save that name for the next one.
I don't know, man. That's here. I'm leaving it on the table. My pitch for this name is Rays Romano.
Rays Romano.
Let us know what you think.
Rays Romano is a tentative name for this horrific monstrosity. Let us know what you guys think in the comments. Before we go, though, we have a couple things to do. We have Patreon shout outs.
Yes.
And we contests? Also we have a contest ongoing. Want me to lead with the contest?
Yes, please.
So we are giving away two copies of Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft, the newest D&D book coming out. It takes place, of course, in the setting of Ravenloft. I do believe it further details out the other domains of Dread. It's very exciting. I'm very excited for this book, and you should be too. So if you want to win a copy, all you have to do is get on Twitter, share a link to your favorite episode of our show or any of our shows with the hashtag DungeonCast. You'll be entered to win. We are giving away a copy on release date, which I believe is May 18th. So you got a couple weeks from now. There's also a way to win on Instagram, which Brian can detail more so than I can.
Go to Instagram, find the post related to the contest. It should be some art of the Van Richten's book, which the artwork for this book I've been seeing has been phenomenal so far.
Indeed.
Very excited to get in there and see what there is to see. But find that post, like it, make sure you're following that Instagram account, and then tag people in the comments below. One tag equals one entry, so you can enter as many times as you'd like. The whole idea is to spread the word about the show. On that note, please leave us an iTunes review, as it really, 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 really helps every time you guys do that, including YouTube comments. Although I think YouTube's algorithm is currently bullying us from some reports I've been seeing. And also there's a lot of spam going on. So like if you guys see the spam, you know, just report it, I guess. I think YouTube's
absolutely
having an issue with that. I woke up
YouTube's
to 99
doing a lot
comments
of stuff right now, which hasn't been great, but there's nothing we can really do about that.
Yeah, not really. But okay, so why don't we get to something a little more pleasant and important to us as well, which is thanking everybody who supports us on Patreon. Thank you guys so much. We're finally getting back to uploading content there, which has been a big relief on our end to get like new stuff aside from early episodes back in there. So yeah, expect more of that as things have started to open up for the post-production side of the show. At long last. So now I want to thank some specific people that have come into Patreon since our last shout out. I want to start out by thanking X.
Thank you, X.
Thank you, X. Next up, I want to thank the Mystic Womble.
Thank you, Mystic Womble, was it? Womble?
Yes.
Mystic Womble.
W-O-M-B-L-E.
I've heard Womble before.
Wombo. I don't know. I say Wombo Combo sometimes. This isn't that.
Do.
It's adjacent. I also want to thank Anne Elizabeth.
Thank you, Anne.
Not like Anne Elizabeth. Like her name is, or their name is Anne.
Yeah, I got you, man. I get it.
Okay, cool. Next up, I want to thank the Incognito 32. What's up, Incognito 32? Thank you.
Thank you, Incognito 32.
Thank you. And finally, last but certainly not least, Luke Sutton. Bah, 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 bah.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you so much.
Luke, like Luke Skywalker.
Did I not say Luke? I thought I said Luke.
It almost sounded like you said look, like look at this thing.
Thank you, Luke.
Thank you, Luke. And that's it. That's who we got. So thank you guys so much. Make sure you're enjoying your bonus content that you are entitled to per your tier. There's lots of stuff to enjoy on there, more stuff than we can name. But the big notable ones are the stuff that comes out. I think the stuff that comes out on the regular is going to be the Dungeon Chats, which is a separate podcast Will and I do. That's just basically whatever. I think our last topic was it was a very me-centric episode, so I think we're going to flip the script on the next one and do the same exact episode, but for Will.
Okay, I did that.
Yeah, we did top five.
I had a different question I wanted to pose you, but that can wait for the next episode.
Perfect. Yeah, definitely good. We always like suggestions for them. And we did Crunchy or Smooth, which is, if you're like a regular listener across a lot of our mediums, you're going to know that the Crunchy or Smooth is I'm sorry. Chunky or Smooth. And we did that in the episode.
Yeah. Nothing crunchy.
Chunky or Smooth.
All chunky.
Yeah. Crunchy/chunky or Smooth. But we did. That's what we did. It was a lot of fun. You can get access to episode notes that Will writes. And then you can do there's a lot of like actual play stuff in there. Comedy games, cool adventure stuff. There should be another one coming out pretty soon, including like Flashbang and Surgeon, which is a superhero game that we do. And OST for Super Quest Saga, as well as all the other projects we do, are on there. That's a lot of fun to get in there and to listen to, even for me. Go back and hear stuff I made. And exclusive merch. Like, we're trying to update it and do more things in there all the time. So there's stuff. There's, if you want more Dungeon Cast, if you want more Will, Brian, Jake, Freeland, Steve, or et cetera, you can get it at Patreon. But the main thing is really, like, thank you guys for supporting us there. We really, really appreciate it.
Indeed. With that, I believe we can call it a game.
Let's call it a game.
We'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
The Dungeon Cast.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the planet?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you. Find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.